Good morning and welcome to this segment of Your Morning Wake-Up Call. I'm your host, MK. What makes a family? What makes a family risky? In Rachel Howard's fearless and deeply empathetic novel, The Risk of Us, she tackles not only what creates kinship, but what can destroy it. Told through the lens of a childless 40-something couple who become foster parents of a young girl named Marisa, readers are taken on an emotional journey with three people struggling to connect and to find unconditional love. Rachel Howard earned her MFA in fiction from Warren Wilson College and is the author of a memoir, The Lost Night. She's the recipient of a McDowell Colony Fellowship, and her fiction essays and dance criticisms have appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle, the New York Times, the Los Angeles Review of Books, and elsewhere. Thank you so much for joining us. Rachel, it's a pleasure to have you on our show.
Thanks so much for having me, MK.
Yeah, I'm very curious. So why did you choose to take on the foster care and foster parent experience?
Well, though this is a novel, it is informed by my own experience of adopting a child out of foster care. And while I was in that system, I really felt that it was a very complicated crucible of a lot of people involved in a child's life, a lot of people trying to help, trying to make the best decisions, but a lot of competing decisions and a lot of competing ideas about what's best with a vulnerable child in the middle of all of that. And so I felt like that was a really charged space. I think in fiction, one aspect of a good story, a story that's worth people vicariously connecting to in the way that only fiction can do, is that you don't know which way it's going to go. And that can be profoundly true when you're trying to adopt a child out of foster care. So I felt like the story could start with the child moving in with this family that wants to be the quote-unquote forever family, but is the fifth or sixth family that this girl Marisa has been placed with. And then the question of the book is, are they going to get there? Are they going to make it through this limbo where there are a lot of social workers involved, therapists, psychiatrists, people at school, all different kinds of people who have ideas of what's going to help and make this family come together? And are they going to make it to that point and come together as a family?
Yeah, and it's really, in a sense, the untold story of the foster parent. I mean, once you're in the system dealing with all of its complexities, it's very hard to put that in a news headline. And so a fiction book, as you say, is able to get into those complexities. So what were the complexities that you wanted to highlight in your book?
Mm-hmm. Discipline. Can you even discipline? How do you impose boundaries? If there's a strong primal bond in place, that glue is there, but when you're meeting a seven-year-old for the first time and also trying to parent, you're trying to build that bond and put those boundaries in place at the same time, and those two goals are very difficult to make coexist. There's a lot of hidden history that you, just meeting this child, can't see, right? You don't have it laid out for you in documents. So one example would be a foster child might refuse to brush her teeth at night. And the parents may see this as an acting out or just trying to be willfully disobedient. And it may take years to learn the history that that child growing up never had the experience of biological mom or dad brushing her teeth and never had her teeth brushed until she was 5 years old. And so actually, she's refusing to brush her own teeth because she wants you to help brush them for her, because there's a deep emotional need for her to have that bonding experience with you. Mm-hmm. And you don't know that in the moment. All you're trying to do is help the child get to bed and get enough rest so that she can be in a good state of mind the next day.
Yeah.
It takes a long time for that to come out.
Right, right. And this also brings to mind one of the larger topics that you choose to take on, which is the idea of unconditional love. And mm-hmm. doesn't that always sound so good? If only mm-hmm. it were that simple. Can you talk a little bit about why you chose to take that particular topic on?
it's a deep human topic because it begs the other question of what is unconditional love, which may be unanswerable. And I think this is why I write fiction. I'm really drawn to the unanswerable questions. But I think one experience that happens in foster care is that the children and the parents who are trying to parent them both want that love, right? And so when they first come together, there may be a lot of, like, I love you, I love you, I love you, and intensely trying to make that connection true before it's actually there, because it only happens and love evolves over experience together and time. It doesn't happen on that first week that you're together. So there's sort of a moving past that initial frenzied attachment, and you have to move through actually some hard experiences and some testing experiences together until you get to an actual state of bonding and equanimity.
Yeah, and also you talk about the idea that sometimes love just doesn't fix everything. Can you cite some examples from your book that you think are telling in that regard?
On the one hand, I think it can be helpful to have this belief of love is going to be the answer. And on the other, thinking that, you know, you're going to just tell the child, I have this unconditional love for you, and give them a stable home, and then that bond is going to be there, is completely unrealistic. And so you have to bounce between that hope and that realism. One idea of love that I'm personally interested in, so I went to Grace Cathedral. I actually was raised with no religion and started attending a Grace Cathedral in San Francisco in my 20s. And there was a preacher I loved there, and he would often put forth this idea that maybe love isn't about feelings. Maybe it's more a policy than it is about feelings. And that there's actions that we take that are loving actions even when we're not having the feelings. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely something you have to do for a long time when you're in a situation with a child who maybe bounces, the child, him or herself, may bounce back and forth between wanting that bond with a parent, because it's risky to trust another person after, say, four or five parents previous have let you down.
Yeah.
You know, are you really going to put that trust out there again? And then the other thing that's surprising, that I think is more subtle, is that there is, you know, control and self-protection in being a free agent and thinking that you don't need anyone and getting to make decisions for yourself without all the little compromises of family life. And sometimes the child has to pass through that too. So I think the foster care bonding experience, in a lot of ways, it can be like getting to a point of marrying. the each side has to say yes, and each side is going to pass through moments of doubt about whether they actually want to say yes.
Yeah, and that's such a much more realistic view of it all. Was this part of your desire in writing the book, was to try to help people who might be considering becoming foster parents, to sort of, not so much a cautionary tale, but at least just mm-hmm. one of go in with your eyes open so you can be properly prepared when you are called to action?
Yes. I would say yes. I think I really approached it as a fiction writer, which it's a fine line you walk as a writer between wanting to write something to just show the complex truth of the thing, and from whatever follows from that. It can be a little dangerous as a fiction writer to actually want practical outcomes in the world, but because then that can shade you against actually telling the truth, right? You start to bring that kind of desire to see change into the truth that needs to be revealed. So it's a little complicated always for a fiction writer, but I did personally wish, while I was going through the experience, for someone to just be real with me. And sometimes I wanted to just go and be able to tell social workers or therapists, this is really hard, this is really testing me, and feel that they got it.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's go back to some of those complexities again about taking on a child within the foster care system. And speaking of hoping that the service providers get it, can we talk a bit about the psychiatric use of drugs? Because I know that's contained within your book, that topic, that subject is brought up mm-hmm. between the child and the family and decisions about that. Can you talk about the role that plays in foster parenting?
Yeah, so the book is narrated by the woman who is trying to adopt Marisa, and then she's speaking to her husband, Sebastian, and sometimes speaking directly to Marisa, and then sometimes trying to speak directly to both of them and figuring out how to do that. And so it's like you're overhearing this intimate conversation, which was something that was important to me about the approach to it, to give the reader a little bit of space, almost like, you know, you're getting to kind of peek inside someone else's life instead of having lessons coming at you. The other thing that's interesting about the narrator, though, that's part of the setup, is that she's taking in a traumatized child, having herself been through trauma when she was a young girl. And she's hoping, the mother is, that this is going to give her empathy that will help her connect with the child and meet the child where she really is. And another interesting factor of the mother in the book is that when she was starting to deal with the trauma in her own past, her father was murdered when she was a little girl, she decided not to take any psychiatric drugs. She stands by that decision. She felt that was the way that she was able to work through the emotional problems instead of trying to just medicate them or cover them up. And so that's the decision that she makes for her daughter as well. The family does go to a psychiatrist, and they have moments of thinking that psychiatric drugs, medicating the child, might make things easier. But the mother is committed to doing everything she can to help the child without having drugs prescribed. Art, theater, and music are so much more healing.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of, I think that the investigations that are happening into the foster care system right now are really important as well. This is another angle of coming at the subject. There was a terrific investigative series in the San Francisco Chronicle in 2017 about group homes and children being over-medicated, medicated as a first resort, and also about in group homes, the police being called and young children having a record of charges against them as a kind of coping mechanism that it has ramifications down the road that we want to avoid. We're dealing with an identity in formation, right, when you're working with a child and trying to be a loving presence to a child. And I do think there's a fine line to be walked in therapy for trauma between recognizing the symptoms, the necessity, perhaps bureaucratically, of giving them a label, but then not going so far as to make that label a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I think that when children learn that they're on medication, it definitely wants to be a last resort, because there's a risk of they're taking on the feeling that they're broken and that they're only okay with this medicine, or what's wrong with me that I have to take this. I just think there's a danger of creating self-fulfilling prophecies in a lot of realms when it comes to young identities and formation.
Yeah, and especially when you think about sometimes the brain is still forming at that young age, right?
Absolutely. So one thing I'll put out there. So the end of the book, it's a novel, but at the very end, I cited the real parenting books that are sometimes quoted within the novel. several of which I am not a fan of. And the one that I loved, and if I could just tell anyone out there who's trying to work with traumatized children of any kind or foster children, a book called The Body Keeps the Score by Besser van de Kolk. It's a deep study by one of the world's leading authorities, researchers on trauma. And the two populations he looks at most closely, because they are the most consistently deeply traumatized, are foster children and war veterans. It was a hard decision to write this book, to do it from the parents' point of view, because I think our automatic reaction, which is an important one, is the child is the most important and most vulnerable person in this equation here. In almost every foster-to-adoption situation, the hard truth is that you don't know if there's going to be a happy ending, and you have to pass through that unknowing to get there. And I still see this in other foster families that I know. I just visited with another foster family 2 weeks ago. They have a 12-year-old girl that they just took in, and they're incredibly committed. This girl has already gone through 6 placements.
Wow.
And, yeah, and the people who took her in, the woman is a former social worker. And so, you know, she thought she was more prepared than most and could not be more committed. And yet, even with commitment and best intentions, it's not a guaranteed happy ending. So I wanted to just honor the complexity of that and be real about that. Not only to give parents who are trying to adopt out of foster care, which I have to say, for all the challenges, I highly recommend, because it can be one of the most beautiful experiences in the world, to give them some comfort of being able to relate, but also to make the flip side point that we should never be blithe about children entering foster care. Which I think is topical now with the family separations that have happened at the border. Some people in positions of power have said, oh, that's going to be okay. They're going to enter foster care. But let's be realistic about just how difficult it is to build a family out of foster care and do everything that we can to prevent us having to be in that situation in the first place. The number of children in foster care has been rising for 5 years in a row now. It's at 443,000 are the most recent numbers we have from 2017. But who knows how much higher it's become in the last 2 years with the family separations at the border. The foster parents are Caucasian, and the daughter is Latina, half Caucasian and half Mexican-American, and she's aware of that. And as she's hearing just even snippets of the presidential debates, she's asking about, what is this talk about the wall? What is this talk about the bad hombres? And after the election night happens, I think the parents have already been through some really difficult moments of, are we going to continue having hope in us coming together as a family? And that pushes the stakes even higher. Now, given what's happening to society, we have to have hope. It just takes being present. It just takes radical not knowing what's going to happen next. And that could be a breakthrough, or it could be a down spiral. But just being in that every moment of not knowing, that it's just being there moment to moment, and sometimes realizing, I am not in control of this, and I don't know what happens next. And then a space opens up for the unexpected. Don't let the child see you break down.
Right.
Because if you show them your own hysteria and that you're not in control, that's going to be really frightening for them. They need you to stay in control. And then there's a day where her daughter is making a rage, and she decides to record it because the daughter keeps saying, you're yelling at me, you're yelling at me. And the mother in the book is saying, but I'm not yelling at you, but I'm not. And so the only way she knows how to prove this is to record it. But then she listens back to the recording, and actually the calm in her voice is almost as eerie as if she had been angry. I was trying to stay calm, and I don't hear love in that voice. I think that's the one thing that I hope that readers get from the book, is that we live in a time of so much information and so many people having embattled opinions and embattling fixes, and so few spaces for being with the complexity of a situation, and recognizing that there's often simultaneous beauty and pain in a situation, being with both of them at once, and doing that in a way where we can get in touch with our true deeper intentions. Because I do think there are a lot of things policy-wise that need to change in the foster care system across the various states, more power and rights given to the youth who are in that system.
We are speaking with Rachel Howard. She is author of The Risk of Us. And I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, MK. I appreciate it.